Good morning. Happy Friday, TGIF. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy. And you know what? I have an amazing show for you today. And it's going to be so amazing because this is the first time in the history of the Roundtable Talk Show that this has happened. I have three returning guests, not one, not two, but three guests that have been here before. So I'm already sure that we're going to have an amazing time because I've spoken to these ladies and we've had a blast before and they came back for more. And I'm glad that you came back for more because this show is going to be one of the best shows ever. So I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go ahead and share this show. But this time, I not only want you to share the show, because I appreciate it. It's nice. It's wonderful. But I need you to go to your neighbor's house. I need you to call your mom. I need you to text your dad. I need you to tweet your brother. I need you to inbox your best friend. Whatever you have to do, if across the country, send them a carrier pigeon. Do whatever you have to do. But friends, don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you are sharing the show, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. This lovely lady, again, this is her second appearance on the show, and you're going to see her. She's so beautiful. She's so attractive. But when she was on the show, she just was so quiet. And then all of a sudden, she just started talking. And I'm like, wow, there's some fire in there. And when you hear her story, you're going to see the fire as well. I want to say good morning to Tay Daniels. She is the CEO and founder of It's VA. And she's going to talk about her virtual assistant business that she used to help the wedding industry. Good morning, Tay. How are you?
Good morning. I'm so excited to be back. The first time was so great. I was quiet. I was listening, taking it all in. But I had to come back because it was a good time.
But it was exciting to have you. Why did you come back? That's what I want to know. What made you decide to return?
I came back because of your energy. I just feel like this weird connection to you. Like whenever we just talk, you have this energy that just makes you want to keep talking. Like I feel like we could be friends. We could sit in the same room. So I was like, I have to hear more. And then people on the last panel, we've become friends on Instagram and like we talk and I'm like, this is amazing to just meet new people and had to be back.
Okay, well, don't worry. I got your Cash App or your PayPal or your Zelle, whatever it is. I'm going to send you a little bit. Don't worry. I got you, girl. It's Friday, so I don't know what I'm going to say. But tell us a little bit about yourself, Tay, your business, and what you do.
So I am the CEO and founder of It's VA Tay, which is a virtual assistant company for the wedding industry. I do coaching personally, one-on-one, intensive coaching to teach wedding pros how to hit six figures in their business. And then the agency side is just back end work for clients to run their admin, run their services if it's a done for you. I started my company in 2016 and been going full time ever since. I jumped right in, quit my full time job while I was 7 months pregnant and said, this is it. I'm going to do it. And I went through a lot through my company, but my end goal is to not only teach women to be their own boss and be the CEO of their company, but to get through life. Like even if you have kids, if you are going through something in life, to still succeed in business is my goal. So that's what keeps me going.
Yes. What interests you so much about the virtual assistant business and why focus on the wedding industry in particular?
I started the virtual assistant side of it to be able to work essentially wherever I wanted to work from so that I could be at home with my daughter. But the wedding industry specifically was always something I was really interested in. I liked just everything about it. I liked design and like planning. And so I knew I wanted to be in that industry, but I wasn't sure how I was going to connect the dots. I didn't want to be a planner. So I just kind of started this idea of being a back-end support system for the industry. That took off for the first like 3 years. And then I kind of rebranded completely. I changed the name. I changed everything about it because really what I want to do is empower women in general to live their best life. You know, be able to change their mindset, shift their mindset, because I was noticing that there were a lot of successful vendors or successful women in general, but they always had this like, oh, well, I don't have enough time. I don't have enough money. This is just a side hustle. I have kids. And they weren't really hitting their goals. They weren't really living for them. So that was where I came in and was like, you know what? I want you to be that successful wedding vendor, but how are we going to get there? How are we going to shift your mindset? How are we going to change you? So that was where I found my passion, my love, is just to be able to inspire and help women live their best life.
Okay. But you also, you're married, you have a 3-year-old daughter. How do you balance all of that and run a business and still look beautiful? Like my hair is always like all over my head. I'm like running all the time. How do you hold it all together?
A lot of coffee, but I don't always look so beautiful. There's a lot of days that like today, I've been up since 5 a.m. Obviously my kid, just trying to balance it all. But luckily I have a super, super supportive partner, and he is amazing. He helps me with, you know, being a parent, of course, so that I can run my business. But a lot of the times he'll have to come to my office and be like, it's 6:30 p.m. Are we going to eat dinner? Are you going to come hang out with us? So I'm still working on that balance of, you know, wife life, work life, mom life. And I love work. I do, you know, I'd forever if I could, but I just have to keep reminding myself that I need to allot my time so that I can keep mentally balanced, and then make sure that they're taken care of too.
Wonderful. Of course, we're going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. Dafina Sharp is here with us today. And even though this is her very first appearance, something tells me we will be seeing her again. She is a lawyer and at a successful law firm. It is the law office of Dafina Sharp. Good morning, Dafina. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. Thank you so much for having me.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us. And you're in immigration law.
That's correct.
Okay. So this is when I'm gonna ask the hard questions, because people tune in because I ask the hard questions. So I hope this question doesn't scare you. Don't run away. But I'm sure people who are watching want to know, how is it for a Black woman or African-American woman, whichever one you prefer, to be in immigration law?
Actually, it's not so bad in terms of just immigration per se. I think it's hard just being a Black woman lawyer, right? Because especially when you work for yourself and you have to get your own clients, because you have to convince them that you know what you're talking about. And I think if you're a white man, they just automatically have this confidence that he knows the law. And it's even worse when you're a young lawyer. But funny enough, I've been practicing law for 12 years, even though I don't look that
way. Were you 10 when you started?
Exactly. So it's hard. I think the hardest part is to convince people that I know what I'm talking about and I'm actually experienced. So I think that's the difficulty, not so much immigration. Or the law itself, you know?
The only reason I asked about immigration law is because, and anyone, I'm going to introduce my other guest, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we have heard so much about immigration than we have under the current president. You know, all of a sudden it's like immigration, you know, with everything going on with COVID-19, he just took away certain visas. You know, I believe it's the HR, I think it's 4, something like that. You know, that part I don't know. But there's been more of a focus on immigration. And then when you start talking about immigration, then you have to look at, you know, who's native, who's this, what are the laws, what are the legalities, you know, because I'm in California, you know, I understand what the border looks like. And so when you have children and you have family literally in prison sleeping on the floor, you know, and this is what we consider America. So I don't want to get on my soapbox, especially not at 8:09. I usually reserve my soapbox for about 8:50. But I mean, that can't be easy for you.
Oh my goodness. With this current president, it's been really, really difficult practicing immigration law because let's just say the laws haven't been, I shouldn't say the laws, but the executive orders, you know, which is basically something that the president can pass with the stroke of a pen. So the thing that makes it really difficult with this present administration is the laws or the rules can just change like that. And it makes it really, really difficult. So yes, a lot of my clients, they don't want to come forward or apply for certain things because they're afraid that going to, you know, be ordered, removed, or, you know, deported. So they rather just like sit back in the shadows and not apply for anything unless they're forced to.
So aside from just the immigration law, what made you decide to be a lawyer at all?
Well, I have a mom who's very ambitious, and she forced me and my sister to also be ambitious. Like, she set really high expectations for us. So she was not having that, you know, like, basically, you're going to go to school, you're going to go to college. And she did push both of us to want to continue our education so that we can have, you know, lucrative careers. So my mom is definitely the backbone to why I became a lawyer. She said, you know, what do you think you want to do, be a doctor or a lawyer? And I'm like, well, I think I'd rather be a lawyer than a doctor. And that was the first step for me becoming a lawyer in the first place. I didn't decide to be a lawyer until maybe my junior year of college. I was definitely not one of those people who said, you know, I always wanted to be a lawyer since I was 4 years old. That wasn't the case for me. I had a mom behind me supporting me and encouraging me, you know, to further my education. I'm glad that she did, because if she didn't, I wouldn't even be half as successful as I am today.
Oh, that is so wonderful. And I know exactly what you mean. I always talk about my cousin, Carrie. He is a news reporter for CBS or ABC or some major channel in Columbus, Ohio. And I'm so proud of him. The family is so proud of him. But when he was a kid, like 7, 8, 9 years old, he will walk around the house with a spoon and he'd interview cousin Sharifa, you know, like, what's going on? I'm like, you know, but now he's a news reporter. And I talk about my story. I was that kid who annoyed the hell out of my mom, like, because I was always talking. I was always asking questions. And I was like, why are they doing that? And why are they doing that? And why did they say that? And why, you know, and my mom was like, if you don't, just shut up. But now, you know, I'm a talk show host. So we kind of go, we wind up in that same vein. And I love what you said about your mom. I love about her being ambitious. But what, you know, sometimes when our parents kind of push us in a certain direction, we often, we might tend to resent some aspect of it. Was there anything else, or, you know, where you said, you know what, well, maybe I might want to be a dancer, or, you know, a teacher? Did you ever consider something else for yourself?
No, I mean, I think the good thing with my mom is, even though she pushed my sister and I, she did leave it up to us to find something that we at least kind of liked, right? So I was similar to you as a child too. Some might consider it rebellious, but I would always say to my mom, but why? But no, but what's your reasoning behind that? You can't just tell me do X, Y, Z because I said so, you know? And I think that also helped me with my legal career, because I'm always trying to understand the reasoning, you know, behind something. So it wasn't like me being resentful and feeling forced. I definitely, you know, wanted to, but she pushed, like, in terms of like having me think about what it is you're going to do after this. So she did leave it up to me to decide what to do, but she did push to say, well, okay, what's the next step?
Well, that's good. That's wonderful, because I speak to different people and sometimes they're interested in that career. Sometimes they're not, you know, but I just want people to be happy, whatever that is. So we are going to ask you some more questions, probably get into very deep, interesting conversation. I'll come right back to you, but I want to introduce our next guest. She's probably dealing with some of the same situations as you, Dafina, with our current president. She's just in a different industry. I want to introduce Deb Gordon, and we're going to talk about Deb Gordon's book, The Healthcare Consumer's Manifesto. So I have my book. We haven't introduced you, but Jody, do you have your book?
I have it, and I love it. A must read. Yes.
Definitely a must read. But we're going to introduce our guest, Deb Gordon. This is Deb's second appearance on the show. Good morning, Deb. How are you?
Morning. I'm great. How are you?
I am wonderful. You have your book back there in the background. Yes. I love the banner. It's so beautiful. I'm going to ask you the same question I started with Tay, just because that's the feeling I'm in right now. What made you decide to come back to the Roundtable Talk Show?
Yeah, I thought Tay gave a great answer. I don't mean to copy you, Tay, but I think I was just sort of like bl- blown away by your energy, but also like five random people come together and you get us all talking and you find the themes in sort of everyone's work. And I just, that is a rare skill. I loved being part of it. So I was glad, I was eager to come back. Thank you.
And thank you for pointing that out, because that's one of the things I talk about since I've been doing this show since March 3rd. You know, in the beginning, it felt like strangers or just individual people. But over time, no matter what, I always saw a theme. I always saw a commonality, and I could find it in the morning email. I'm like, okay, here it is. Or maybe I don't see it. And people started talking. I had a show a couple of weeks ago where two people were talking about mental illness. And then another person, they were talking about something else. And then the third person started talking about mental illness and the challenges because her family members suffer from mental illness. So it always has these commonalities. You just have to find them. You know, that's what I believe. We have more in common than we have that's different. And I'm feeling my soapbox today. I'm going to have to watch that. When I get on my soapbox, I don't give other people enough chance to talk. So Deb, the reason I wanted to go from you, from Dafina to you, is you deal with the healthcare industry. And I was watching on social media, people are posting right now about Trump, our president, and how he is trying to get Obamacare undone. And that's like the current focus. But you want to make some improvements in the healthcare. Can you talk a little bit about your passion and what you do?
Sure, thank you. So I have spent my whole career working in healthcare for either vulnerable people or folks who just sort of need a little help. One of the things, I hesitate to say vulnerable people, when I started my career, I was working with on a project, for example, for healthcare for the homeless. Mm-hmm. And one thing that really struck me about doing that work with, you know, thinking about how homeless people can access healthcare was like, my gosh, you know, many of us are just a couple of bad luck turns away from that situation. It could be any of us. And if once you can identify with people who are really vulnerable, you realize we all have some risk of vulnerability. And then to me, then you have to, you know, work on that or do something. And so I've spent my career, you know, I worked for many years in a health plan for low and moderate income people. And I, after that, I sort of took, I call it like a sabbatical, to do research and write this book, The Healthcare Consumers Manifesto, based on consumer interviews. So based on conversations, not unlike what we're having now, but a little deeper into like, what is your experience? What has happened for you when you go to any, I know we have, you know, like a focus on, you know, how women's empowerment and how we group, you know, like how do people spend their own money when it comes to healthcare and how do they feel about doing so? Do they have what they need? Do they get value for their money? Do they know what they're doing? And what would make, you know, most of the answers no. And so the question then is like, how do we fix it? And what I learned during that research is many people who don't look or seem vulnerable in any way, you know, people of quite a bit of privilege when it comes to healthcare feel completely unprepared, exposed, and in a way vulnerable, either financially or clinically. People just don't know how to navigate. Mm-hmm. Everyone feels exposed to the cost too. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. In your manifesto, what are some of the strategies that you give people in order to make better informed decisions in regards to their healthcare?
Yeah, I wish I could say that I found the answer, you know, some complicated hidden truth. But I think the strategies we need to employ are right there. But they are things like we first need to recognize that when we're getting healthcare in America, it's coming out of our pocket, either directly now because we're paying co-payments and deductibles, or indirectly because our employer is paying our, you know, a lot of that bill, and they're counting that as our compensation, right? So there's a lot of data about wage stagnation. Before the pandemic and before 40 million people had to go on unemployment, there was already a sense of stagnation in wages. And there's some assessment or some analysis that suggests for every dollar of healthcare spending, you don't get that dollar in wage increase. So I may have that statistic wrong, but the idea is that healthcare costs are kind of eating up our wage increases, or there's a real direct tie to our own financial well-being, not just our physical well-being. So first and foremost, we have to recognize that healthcare spending is our money. And then everything flows from that. How do you spend your money on other things? Do you, you know, throw it out the window, light a match and burn it? You don't. You ask, what does this cost? And, you know, do I need it? You know, if you have a limited budget, which most of us do in some, at some level or another, we have a limited budget. Do we need that or that? Do we really need it? Is there an alternative? Can it wait? Is there a better way? And so when people start to embrace kind of ownership for the spending, people, I would then say, okay, now ask the question. What, you know, it's awkward for a lot of folks to talk about money, period. And then to be seen as questioning a doctor, it's very difficult. People feel shy about it. People also don't even realize they can or should. So to me, it's like, think of this as your money, act accordingly. And that might be ask, look for alternatives. I say negotiate. If you get a bill that doesn't look right, push back on it. Even sometimes asking the question can get someone to drop, you know, a provider can drop some fees or check their mouth or check their coding and fix it. So it's really about feeling empowered, acting like, whether you feel it or not, pretend, act like you're empowered, act like it's your money and you're entitled to get value for it.
One of the things that we discussed when you were here the last time is people have the ability to ask for the cash cost of the services that they're providing and not just accept that they have to go through their insurance.
Yeah, that annoys people in the industry quite a bit because the whole idea of health insurance is that the idea is that the insurer has negotiated a better price. So the cash price in theory should be cheaper. Like that, it just blows people's minds when I talk to economists or healthcare insiders, they're like, that's wrong. That's not the way to do it. I'm like, okay. But sometimes I talk to people who say they've asked, you know, what if I just pay out of pocket? It's actually cheaper. It's certainly less hassle if you have the money, but it can be actually cheaper and it's not supposed to work that way. That's the thing. I think we believe, just to, if I may get on my philosophical soapbox for a second.
Go ahead.
All right. I think we tend to believe that things work the way they're supposed to work. I'm really biting my tongue on some analogies I could make here when you mentioned, I'm not going to do it unless you ask. But the idea of like, someone's doing it this way, so it must be okay. Like that is very limited. That creates a real constraint, like a failure of imagination to consider that it might work. You know, there might be a better way and it might be possible to access that better way if you just ask. So I think as Americans or just humans, I don't know. I think we tend to sort of swallow whole what we're given. I am not that way. Me and Dafina could have been friends in high school or whatever, you know, like questioning, you know, digging out the truth. And, you know, like, I think nobody in this group probably, Sharifa, but you said it too, like, we don't just accept what we're told as truth and move on. And I think a little bit of that, it doesn't have to be negative, but just a little bit of like, look out for yourself, ask a question, even if it seems like the person telling you this is what it costs, feel like there's no room. Sometimes all it takes is just asking, is there any room? Can you do any better? Is there another way? What if I pay cash? Like just the question can unlock options that you don't even seem like they're on the table.
I definitely agree. One of my favorite expressions is everything's negotiable. And I truly believe that. And I truly live by that. And people say, well, what if someone says no? I'm like, well, then you negotiate. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't just accept no. That's how we got in this situation to begin with. Everything is negotiable. And I love to negotiate. I crack my friends up, my family. We go to every store, any store, no matter what it is. I ask for discounts. I'm like, can I get a discount? And they're like, what for? I'm like, I don't know. I just want a discount, like employee discount, friend discount. Like, I just want a discount. And what's so amazing and amazes people around me is sometimes I get it. They'll say, well, you know what? I can't give you my employee discount, but I can give you 10% off because I'm like, okay, good. I'll take that. I just love asking for stuff. That's just who I am and how I enjoy life. And that's how I get a lot of discounts and free stuff. But I want to go over and introduce my next guest, who this is her third appearance. And this lady is so wonderful, so amazing. And her spirit is so wonderful. When she initially came on the show, she was surrounded by business people. And we were all in our business minds. And she came in and she just started counseling us and talking to us from our heart. And I'm like, oh, she is so amazing. And this is her third appearance. So you may recognize her. So I know she's going to counsel us and probably counsel me like she always does. But it's all in love. We have Jody DeLuca, who is a licensed clinical psychologist from Erie, Colorado Counseling. Good morning, Jody. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm great. And again, it's a privilege to be here and to be with such incredible women and successful women. So thank you for having me once again.
You are so welcome. So you know I have to ask, sure, what made you decide to come back and what keeps you coming back?
And I'll tell you, and I call it as I see it, you're real. The show is real. There's no censoring. It's educational. It's an opportunity to network. I've had the wonderful opportunity, for example, to network with Deb outside of here. And it's been incredible because our mission is the same. And it's a place where people of different types of orientations and businesses, there's always a common theme that levels the whole show out at the end. So it's, for me, I look forward to this. I'm very selective in where I appear, what guest appearances, where I do interviews and so on. I love it. I love it. It's real. I don't have to worry about what I say. I can be myself, and everybody, despite our differences, we get along and we respect them. And so to me, it's a no-brainer.
Thank you. I love that. I receive all of that. You guys, I'm going to have a wonderful weekend. I'm just going to be smiling about this week and especially this show. And for everyone who's watching live, I told you, wake up your friends because this show is hot. I didn't post it. I didn't share it. I didn't made a watch video because I knew the magic that I was bringing today. So we're going to talk a little bit about what you do now, Jody. Tell us about your Colorado Counseling.
Well, I'm a licensed clinical psychologist, and Erie is my private practice. This is the second private practice I've had. The first one was in the West Chase, Tampa, Florida area. I've had a career as a medical psychologist working within the hospital settings, in the emergency room, trauma units, burn units. And my passion has always been human behavior and just the human condition. So I've been very fortunate with that and being able to actually have that experience within the hospitals, but also within a private practice setting, which is very much different. I'm a world traveler, mainly because I just love to observe the diversity in our species. And I think that has been very, very helpful in the transformation as me from originally a mental health clinician to eventually a psychologist. So I feel very fortunate. And that's what I do. So right now I have Erie. I'm the owner, small business owner of Erie, Colorado Counseling in what was once a little town, Erie, Colorado, which is now growing very fast.
Mm-hmm. Now I mentioned at the top of the show that this is the first time that I've ever had three returning guests on the show. But this is also the first time that I've had two returning guests that were on the same show. And part of the reason why we have you and Deb back is because on our last show, we started to discuss mental illness and how it was affecting people, especially during COVID-19 and the quarantine. And we were about the last 5 or 6 minutes of the show. And I was like, wait, we can't go in a different direction.
Getting heated.
Yes. And so we're like, okay, you got to come back. So we're back. What have you seen with people, with us mortals, humans, during COVID-19?
There's so many emotions, thoughts that are going on, behavioral changes. I mean, this has been a psychological, emotional, physical, economic devastation, but also threat to the nature of who we are. Even, especially in my field with my colleagues, we talk about this, is setting our own boundaries, because there's so many different things that have been evolving. The quarantine fatigue, the collective grief and fear and anxiety and anger and frustration that we're feeling, not only within our country, but around the world, is so real. And I know many times as a psychologist, I have to set back and I have to actually consult with peers and say, okay, this is what I'm feeling right now. And what do you recommend? What can you recommend to me to make sure that I check with myself and I self-monitor? Because what's happened as a fallout, and I'm going to, if it's okay, jump to the fallout, is there's been so many other global variables and national variables that have evolved, possibly as a kickback or a ripple effect from COVID. The mask, no mask. Soon it's going to be to vaccinate, not vaccinate. The Black Lives Matter, the political, what we're going to be entering now, what's going on politically. And Delphina, even with the immigration, I have a few patients that are actually immigration attorneys, and what they're feeling, what they're experiencing. And then just with the healthcare, the fear, people are losing jobs. They're, when I talk to them, what is your primary concern? Healthcare. What if we get COVID? I have a family. I've, you know, my kids or my spouse or my family has this medical issue going on. And I think Deb says it beautifully, you know, is we have to educate ourselves and we have to know what our rights are. We do that when we go shopping, when we go to buy a car, it works the same way with healthcare. So getting back to your question, in the history of my experience as a clinician, I have never seen the number of challenges our people throughout the world, our species, are confronted with. And for the first time, many individuals, which I have found fascinating, are questioning their own bias, are questioning their own emotions or their own decisions. Friendships, marriages are breaking apart. There's conflict. And with diversity, you know, there's always going to be conflict it on any level, as far as I'm concerned. And it's finding a way to learn and be able to navigate that is a big problem and causing so much stress, anxiety, and behavioral health, also known as mental health issues, in the average person.
See, that's why I love me some Jody DeLuca. She gave it to us raw. She gave it to us straight. She was 100% correct. I do want to go back to something that you mentioned, though, the self-monitoring. When you spoke with your peers, and you, what did you do specifically?
For me, I was being confronted with a lot of extreme behaviors and a lot of individuals calling to schedule appointments or differences, a lot of anger. And I found that once I started to have that emotional response, I had to pull back and I had to consult with colleagues to say, okay, I need to be as objective as I can as a therapist and remove my own unconscious bias, which for the first time was emerging like a lot of my patients. Mm-hmm. So part of being a therapist is being very much aware of what your own belief systems are, what your own bias are, what your own comfort level is, and to know when to refer somebody on in their best interest, especially as a licensed clinician. The license protects the public. Mm-hmm. It's mandated, governed by a higher authority. In addition to federal, we have state. The malpractice protects the clinician, but it's also being very much aware of where your own bias are, your own comfort levels, and never do harm, do no harm. So being self-aware of what you feel and what you think in relationship, not only to your patients, but what's going on in your life, mm-hmm. what's going on in the world. And there's total chaos, total mm-hmm. chaos. And it's very hard for us as clinicians because we're just starting to see, and I've done a lot of publication interviews with this, we are going to have a behavioral health, mental health pandemic of psychological and emotional decompensation because of everything going out. It's not just COVID. And here we're having another resurgence of this pathogen, which has multiple mutations. And guess what? The people that were stabilized and feeling good about it are now starting to re-experience the nightmares, the problems with sleeping, the eating habits change, the anxiety, the depression, the arguing and the frustration. So where do we go from here?
We go to people like yourself, Jody. And then we also want to work with people like Deb. Deb, mm-hmm. I want you to respond to what Jody says, because I also know part of the problem, and I will say this because I usually don't say something is a problem, but part of the problem is that many people who have these feelings or who are going through these emotions, they don't have healthcare. They don't have anywhere to turn. Or yeah. maybe they do have some form of healthcare, but I'll give you an example. My son came to me a couple of months ago, maybe, and he was like, "Mom, you know, I have a bad headache. I need you to take me to the hospital." And I was like, in my head, I was like, "I am not going to the hospital. You know what I mean? I am not sitting in this hospital with all these COVID people." So I literally did the whole parent, I'm sure Tay can relate, some more parents can relate, that whole parent Jedi mind trick where I was like, okay, this is what you do. Take a couple of aspirin, lay down, right? And if you okay in a couple of hours, we'll go from there. If not, then I'll take you. But I was like, after that, I had to talk to the Lord. I was like, Lord, 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 please let this child be okay because I'm not going to this hospital. Deb, can you relate? Like, am I alone in this?
You are not alone, never alone. No, I'm cringing of a bad parenting moment I had very many years ago where I told my very young daughter at the time to basically buck up and then figured out that she was like gushing blood.
Didn't want that to happen. I know, but I was like, it's COVID, I'm not going to the hospital.
No, I know. I mean, I think the point right now is that at a time of intense vulnerability, I think, I don't remember the total number. I know 1.5 million new unemployment claims came through yesterday. And I think the total is in the 40 million range. A lot of those people get their health insurance through their job. And some of them, so here's the, like, started off with, you know, what's happening in the world? What is the political scene about certain issues? Including healthcare, you know, the Trump administration filed a brief, I think it was yesterday, with the Supreme Court trying to overturn, you know, it's been clear that they want to overturn the Affordable Care Act from the get-go, you know, for political reasons. But like, if we could just put politics aside for a second, tens of millions of people just lost their job and their access to healthcare at a time when they can least afford to pay out of pocket. So if you're uninsured and you get sick, and you're unemployed, it's sort of, to me, exposes, I actually wrote an op-ed about this. Like, I think it's time to undo that tie between our jobs and our healthcare, because when we lose our jobs, we often lose our healthcare, health insurance, at a time when we are least able to afford to sort of, we can't fill that gap ourselves because we're also out of income. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to me, what's happening is, you know, in states that expanded Medicaid in states that established their own health insurance marketplaces, a lot of the people who lost their jobs will have an option. So like in my state, Massachusetts, we're deep, deep blue, even though we have a Republican governor, we opened up our health insurance marketplace for a special enrollment period, which meant that if you hadn't gotten your insurance, you could do it now. Like, mm-hmm. let's get everyone covered. That's the goal. Let's get health insurance so that if you get sick, it's not also the end of your life financially. So, but in states that don't embrace that reform because of politics, you know, many, many more people will go without healthcare. And it's like you said, Sharifa, it's not just the kid who turns out to be fine. Like, you probably made a really smart decision, right? Pause, you know, does he really need to go to the hospital? And it sounds like he didn't. So you saved, you know, a hassle and money, and nothing bad happened. But what's going to happen is regular screenings, regular care, urgent care, but not real deep emergent, you know, true emergencies. Things are gonna go by the wayside. People are gonna avoid the care that they really should be able to access. And then when Jody talks about sort of a coming wave of a mental health crisis in the making, you know, that I think is gonna come in over in waves over time. We're going to have the same with, you know, just regular preventable healthcare problems because people are afraid to go to the doctor right now because of infection, which, you know, I think in a lot of hospitals and doctor's offices really know what they're doing. And I do think a lot of them have really put in good protocols, so it's safe. But people, even if they feel safe going, they won't be able to afford it. And I think we are looking at a preventable healthcare crisis ahead.
Well said.
Yes, I agree. Tay, I want to go over to you because, as always, like I pointed out at the beginning, you just sit so quiet and so patient over there, and then all of a sudden you just come with it. So because you did announce it on the last show, I'm not going to get all into your personal business, but you mentioned it, your husband's a police officer, so I'm sure you have healthcare benefits, I'm assuming. But as a business owner, if you didn't have those, or what has been your experience being self-employed, either with the challenges of being quarantined, operating your business, or any thoughts that you may have?
So his healthcare is our healthcare because I had none as a business owner. But before, it was just my private healthcare with my daughter. And then we eventually stopped because it was literally almost as much as my income at one point, just paying for healthcare. And there was actually a time that my daughter cut her finger and I took her to the ER, and I should not have, because I had to pay out of pocket for a full ER bill. And all they did was tell me, we can't stitch her finger because it's too small. So we're going to give you a Band-Aid and send you home. And I'm talking thousands of dollars to get a Band-Aid. So that in itself makes me sick. But I do want to actually go back to what Jody said about mental health, because I do coaching in the wedding industry, and yesterday I was on a coaching call, and right now in the wedding industry, it's two different things. It's COVID, and where's the wedding industry going to go because of COVID, and because now we're out of business, and it's also the Black Lives Matter, because personally, I have cut off relationships, business and personal, over it, because my husband is Black. My child is half Black, and this is not politics. This is humanity. It is nothing more than humanity. And so those two categories alone are affecting mental health. And so so I have to check myself at some points, because some points I feel sick. Like, I'm raising children in this. I have a husband who's also a cop, who's also African-American. Right. Like, I am sick over all of it. And so I'm trying to coach people on their mental health, and I'll check my own, make sure my husband feels mentally okay. And it's a lot going on. And it's like, where's a breaking point? Because it's coming.
Yeah, yes. And that's well said. And you've got a lot going on. Because you've almost hit the trifecta with everything, which are, I'm not going to ask you what politically where you stand, because then I'm going to be like so worried about you, you know, but there's so much going on. And when do we and how do we draw the line in the sand? There's just so many things. It's the wedding, such a wonderful time for so many people, families, to come together to celebrate. And even with that, there's all these challenges and all these bad feelings now. And how do you, you know, how do you separate that? Where do we go from here is the question. I'm not sure that any one person has an answer, but collectively, we all have to work in that direction. For example, in Denver yesterday, yet another statue came down downtown. Okay. All right. I get the frustration, I get the anger, I get all of that, but how about we think about putting them in a museum where the future generations can see what not to do moving forward as far as history? You know, how about we have something solid to learn from? So, and Taya, I feel for you. You've got a hard situation to deal with because there's a lot of challenges. So my question to you would be, what keeps you balanced with all of this? Where is that place that you can just chill and not worry about everything that's going on in the outside? A lot of patients that I've seen are in similar dilemmas where best friends have, after 20 years, are no longer because of differences in politically, race, just belief systems, mask or no mask. And it's like, okay, I think we all need to take a step back, but where do we go with all this emotion and moving forward future-wise? And then, you know, what Deb says, especially with regards to what's going on health today, a lot of people are losing those health benefits in a period for most of us where this is the most threat health-wise. So yes. What are you telling us? Don't get sick. You better not get sick when we don't know enough about this pathogen and why some people are getting sick and why some are not. I mean,
it's a puzzle.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly.
So Jody, I want to allow Tay to answer your question and then I want to get over to Dafina. Tay?
I'll not lie to you. These past months have been hard, like some of the best and hardest months, but I think for me personally, I've been fortunate enough that I've had hard conversations with my family for years because this is not my first relationship interracial. I've dated out of sight of my race my whole life, essentially. So I've had those hard conversations. Then, you know, I really rely on my parents, my grandparents, and now my husband's family to really be my backbone, because there were times over the last few weeks I would just break down and cry. And like, I don't understand, because to me, I don't understand racism. I do not get it. I was lucky that my parents didn't raise me that way. My parents raised me to see people. And I'm forever grateful for that, because now I can raise, you know, I'm that way. Now I just see people for people. But so when people are being the way they've been, I don't understand it. And it hurts my heart for me, for my husband, for my children. So, you know, I've reached out to his family, my husband's family, and talked to them. And like, how have you handled it? Because you deal with it. And my husband's like, you know, I've dealt with this my whole life. This is nothing new. And my heart breaks even harder. And so then I just am trying to, what can I do? Like, from where I am, because I am white and I do have privilege, like, where can I be better? So recently I have found the Loveland Foundation, and it is to give therapy to women of color for free. And I am putting on a fundraiser to donate to them. And it makes my heart happy to know that if I can help a few women or a few people of color get some kind of mental health because they need it. Because if I need it, I know they need it. Then I feel like I'm moving in the right direction. And that alone is helping me feel that those small changes from very few people will change. And that's what's getting me by, because right now I have been to the point that I just, my heart hurts so bad over it.
Well, I love
that's
what
super
you said,
adulting, Tay. Yeah.
I really love what you were saying. I just want to say this, because over the last, since the George Floyd situation, I have been asked to speak on several panels, and it's always from white people who say, Sharifa, we want you on a panel. We want you to speak. And it always ends with them asking me, what should we do? What can I do? You know, my response, and some people didn't agree with it, was you have to do what you feel right in your spirit to do. You can't come to me to say, okay, this is how you absolve yourself of your feelings. So what I love is that you took responsibility and you took ownership and you said, this is how I want to make the world a better place. It may, you know, it may not raise $50 million. It could raise $5 million or whatever it is, but whatever the amount is irrelevant, because you did something to make a difference. And I applaud you for that. And I think that's wonderful that you didn't wait for someone to give you the permission or, you know, the okay to do something. So I love it. Dafina, talk to us. Because yeah. I have, you know, this is what happens. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's why you have to come back a few times to get your point across. But I'm going to give you a few minutes.
I just want to touch on what Tay said. First of all, I think that's super dope. The one thing that I do totally agree with in terms of like, what can we do? I know a lot of my white friends are like, they feel terrible and they, you know that they're privileged and they don't even know what to do. They feel lost. So two things I feel like I recommend, at least to my friends, and that I appreciate when they say, is that they teach their children to do better, because racism is definitely something learned, right? We all know that. We have biracial children as well in my family. My brother-in-law is white, my stepfather is white, my niece is biracial. So the number one thing I think definitely is to teach the next generation to do better. And another thing too, is to promote and collaborate with women of color or people of color in general, so that they can be exposed and introduced to your audience. I think that helps from an entrepreneurial stance. So those two things I think definitely will help. It's something small, you know, it doesn't cost money and it's something that everyone can do. It's been bad though. Like, it's to the point that I don't even go on social media, because I feel like when I go on social media, all I hear is about somebody dying or the next racial, you know, bias. Like, I can't even do it anymore. It's that bad. Like, I don't even like go on my Facebook or Instagram like I used to, because it's just becoming too sad.
It's very overwhelming. And I think what I've noticed too, is that a lot of people, even unconsciously, but consciously, the defense mechanisms are coming out. And there's a lot of misinterpretation, because there's an overload of such sensitive issues.
That's true. And another thing too, like what you said, Jody, is people are losing friends over this, right?
I know.
Because, because you disagree on certain things, like, you know, people will say like Black Lives Matter, but then another group will say, well, what about Black on Black crime? And then it causes like this whole big thing. And like you said, people who have been friends for 20 years now are fighting and not getting along. And I feel like social media, at least for me in my life, is what contributes to that. Like, sometimes if you don't agree with a friend, people don't know how to disagree in a respectful way. And then it causes like this big blow up. So for me personally, I kind of just like stay away.
Yeah, I agree. I have had to stay on social media too, because I feel like that can make like drain your mental health. But like you said, it starts at home. And I've had a few friends reach out to me and say the same thing. What can we do? And I said, well, it starts with your children. So start to raise your children so that they don't come around my children being racist. But, but also, like you were saying, you know, they've reached out to me and said, you know, I've asked people of color what to do, and they're getting mad at me. And I said, well, first of all, what you could do is you could research on your own and you could educate yourself, because there's stuff we're taught in school that's maybe not factual, or maybe it's not the whole truth. Or so where can you educate yourself? Because to be honest, people of color have been dealing with this for so long. They don't want to educate you now.
So, preach, Tay. Let me just tell you, you hit a spot, because, you know, I was telling people that, especially when I did one panel, I was really frustrated. And I told my family, I said, you know, I went into that panel channeling Angela Davis. Like, that was my mode, you know, and she was known for the questions that she asked and her intelligence. But one lady asked me, she was like, Sharifa, I just don't know, and I don't know what happened, and I don't know, because we don't know about all of this. And I asked her, I said, but when you ask me the question, you know, and you say, I don't know, my question to you then is, what part don't you know? Like, what did you miss? And this is what I asked, like, did you miss slavery? Did you miss Jim Crow? Did you miss the fact that even after the 13th Amendment, people are still slaves? Like, let me understand what you don't know so I can inform you. But it's just like, they want to know, people want to know so much. And it's like, you know, my conversation is different. I can't educate you on it. I can help you, you know, when, if you reach a decision, I can give you my viewpoint on what you decide to do. But that's for you to decide how you can make this world a better place, which is why I love your answer and the second part about doing your own research. And just like always on the Roundtable Talk Show, I can talk for hours. I'm pretty sure all of you can talk for hours. I'm not sure about Dafina yet. She ain't, you know what I mean? You gotta grab your spot on the Roundtable Talk Show. You gotta wait till somebody breathe. What's that? You like jump in there.
I know, because I got something to say, but I'm like, you know, let me let her say her part first.
Because what happens is we are down to the last 5 minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who's watching live, as well as everyone who's listening in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. And we're going to start with you, Deb.
Yeah, thank you. I would like to go off topic and respond to the latter part of the conversation about, you know, this national conversation we're having about race and racism. And I want to just say that, you know, I think not only should white people not be asking people of color to educate them, I completely get that's not fair in any way, but I would like people to look at themselves and say, like, did I like somehow deserve more than others? Like, did I get lucky? You know, am I lucky or like super talented and gifted? I think we tend to think we're very special as individuals, and we all are special, but as a race, you know, I was watching the news this morning and people are like, I just don't see it. I don't understand it. And I guess I would just ask people to really look at themselves and think, how did you get what you have? Did you really earn it? Or was it just some of it come through happenstance and good luck? Because that, I think, helps explain or helps put people in a framework or mindset to be more open to the real situation with racial, structural racism and racial injustice in this country. So not my topic, sorry, but I just step out of my lane to just say, like, take responsibility, which I will say is on brand for me, like, take responsibility and empower yourself.
No, we love to hear your thoughts, because the other aspect of what you didn't mention, the other side aspect, is a lot of wealth is passed down from generations. So that's not luck, you know, that's not being special. Because I was talking about one of the things that Anderson Cooper talks about is he doesn't like people to know that his mother was Gloria Vanderbilt. So he hides that. But it's like, okay, yeah, but you still reap the benefits of being Gloria Vanderbilt's child. It puts you in the best schools and the best neighborhoods and having the best education. No matter if people technically know she's your mother, she still signs those checks to take care of your education. So I completely agree. And sometimes we don't look at the benefits that we receive when we just go, okay, well, you know, I'm just white. That's who I am. So I get it. I want to go over to, and thank you for going out of your lane, Deb. I want to go over to Dafina.
Thank you, Sharifa, again, for having me on your platform. I think the number one thing I would definitely say to women or people of color is you definitely need to get your money right, right? Like you said, with generational wealth. I think it was something that I read yesterday. It said something like, you can't negotiate equality from a subservient position, right? And the way that you're not in a subservient position is if you have some power. And then once you have power, as a Black woman especially, you have a duty to empower others, other people of color and other women who are, you know, I guess don't have as much privilege, you know, as white men here in America. So number one thing I think to empower yourself is to get your money right, have ownership, have equity, and then you can now sit at the table or even make your own table and make a real difference. You know, you can't really make a difference if you don't have that power. So I think that's very important. And that's the number one thing I would say to your readers or listeners.
When Dafina speaks, she speaks magic. You know what I mean? Like, that was profound. Deep. You know, it was, because that's what I always tell people. And I did an interview a couple of months ago or a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking about, you know, running for Long Beach City Council, and I didn't win City Council, so I took the round table. And so when I mentioned the round table, he asked, he said, were you like Shirley Chisholm, where you decided they weren't going to give you a seat at the table, you were just going to bring up a chair? And I was like, no, I love Shirley Chisholm, but my belief is I'm going to create my own table. Like, I don't want to sit at your table. This is my table. So nobody can't tell me what to say at my table. Or if I'm 2 hours late to my table meeting,
that's right.
There better not be anybody sitting in my seat, because it's my table. And that's so right. After that interview, I was like, was I arrogant? I wasn't trying to be arrogant, but that's how I feel. I don't need you to give me a seat. This, I'll get my own table. See, this is why I go over. Tay, talk to us.
Yes, I love everything that you guys all have said. This has been amazing. But what I want to say, a little bit what Deb said was, check your privilege is basically what she's saying. You know, because if you're a white woman or you're white in general, or you have privilege, why not use it for good? Why not use it to be better, to bring something good to the world, instead of just being like, I don't even know if I have privilege. So check your privilege, and know that it's okay to change. It's okay to be different. It's okay to think one thing one year and another thing another year, and continue educating yourself, because as someone in business, as an entrepreneur, you're forever learning something new. It's okay to learn something new about race or something that's maybe controversial with your family or your friends. So check your privilege and stop asking people of color what you can do to help educate yourself.
I love it. Jody, take us on out.
Well, I'm going to say what I always say, come in peace. It's very difficult, but you can get your point across better and maybe even change somebody's mind or belief system if it's done with respect for theirs, and knowing that as long as there's another individual on the planet, there's going to be diverse emotions, feelings, all of that. But also what I want to say is, be more self-aware, be more aware, be intentional about thinking where you are and what's going on in life, in your world, your little world, but also our nation and also the world at large. Talk to other people, listen, educate yourself. But understand where you are coming from, where your emotional triggers are or vulnerability, and how that transposes onto how others receive and respond. And what ultimately is the goal? What is the goal? We are all in this together, whether we like it or not, and we will all come out depending on how we agree or disagree on how tomorrow should be navigated. So come in peace, check yourself, self-monitor yourself, and be okay where you are, but also respect the belief systems and choices of others. And it's okay to feel out of sorts right now. We all are. It's okay.
I think that is wonderful. Wonderful, well said. I just love what everyone had to say. And for everyone who is listening live or tuning in live to this show, I hope your friends aren't mad at you, because your friends are going to be mad if they wander onto the show and they know you saw it live and you were watching it and you didn't let them know. But you still have the opportunity right now to go ahead and share the show, because everyone needs to know about our discussions here on the Roundtable Talk Show. And I want to thank you ladies for being beautiful, for being wonderful, for being angels, for being authentic, for being vulnerable, for being opinionated, and sharing your views today on the Roundtable Talk Show. So thank you. Thank you for coming in peace, coming with your hearts, and coming with your own stories. I want to thank everyone who tuned in live today to watch the show. Thank you for all of the people who tune in every day on a regular basis. I want to say thank you to Jasmine, to my mom who tuned in this morning. I want to thank you to Raylene. So many people tuned in to catch this show. I want to thank you to all of our top fans, especially to everyone who watches this show. But it's not enough to just watch the show. And I don't ever say this, but I'm going to say this today. It's not enough to just watch the show. We want to hear your voice. We want to hear your thoughts. We want you to be a part of the change. Please go to asharifa.com and select be a guest on the show so we can hear from you and that you are providing a positive impact to the world. So until Monday morning, it is TGIF. I had a wonderful time today. Everyone have a safe and a blessed weekend. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.